Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 6th of August, recording at 9:21 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights. The Asian stock markets were mostly a little bit steadier. Hong Kong was closed here today, but China was a little higher. One of the best gains was in Australia. That was up over 3%. And European indices, well, they sort of swung around a little bit, but then rallied towards the close as Wall Street reduced an early sell-off. And so we had modest gains extending the technical rally that we've been seeing recently. Now, in the other markets, the North and South American markets, Brazil, Mexico, Toronto, Canada, of course, Toronto being Canada, of course, they're all higher in here today. The resources markets have been hit fairly hard, really. They were weakening, getting a late correction as stock markets were heading down to those mid-July lows, and then they kept on going down as the oil price peaked. Now, Wall Street closing with modest gains. The best gain was in the NASDAQ Composite Index of the three majors, I should say. That was up 1.2%. And elsewhere, long-dated government bond prices down in the U.S., slightly down in Europe, up a wee bit in the U.K., and crude oil is a little bit weaker in here today, 118.35. That didn't do any harm to stock market sentiment. And the big story of the day, though, really is the U.S. dollar, which has been very, very firm recently and is right up at the higher side of its current range against the U.S. dollar index. And commodity markets, generally a bit of a mixed sort of quiet day in here, although the grain and bean complex remains weak. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, I think the data that we've been pointing out, we had that selling climax or that acceleration into mid-July. Then the big spike upwards in the financials. I'm talking now about particularly about the European and North American indices. And the North American indices are hugely important because of the Wall Street leash effect that I've commented on so often over the decades. And we have seen some choppy activity overall, as we normally get at terminal junctures. You know, when you get markets that show that climactic action and then you get a positive lead from the financials, there's an awful lot of second guessing, or people say, well, the breadth isn't there, or it's up one day and it's down the next. Well, of course it is, because people are still undecided and they're still very nervous. But if you look at the charts, you see that there are more upward dynamics than downward dynamics since that mid-July low. Quite clearly. And the leadership, as I say, has been very strong from the financials. Okay, that's mostly short covering, and then the SET tinkering their short selling selling rules. But the strength of the short covering just shows the extent of the short selling that had taken place, which is absolutely huge in some of those shares. And that game certainly seems to be over for a while. Now, a number of these stock market indices are pressing up against the underside of their January-March trading ranges, or at least the March reaction lows, where that was some way lower than the January lows. And that is a psychological resistance level. But some of these indices are now pushing back up into those patterns. And with crude oil following, and given the extent of the previous downward move we had, and excuse me, and given the extremes of some of the sentiment indicators that we've talked about and that I've posted, I do feel that we're still very much on course for that rally. Which I've said from the middle of July would probably last at least a month or two. Now, could it be more? Yes, sure, it could be more. What would be the fundamental background if it was to be bigger than just a rally of a month or two? And I would give this at least a 40% chance. And that chance would improve enormously if the background factors continue to improve. Well, so what would those background factors be? Well, the most important one by far is crude oil, as I've mentioned. Crude oil has been everything in the last few months in terms of sentiment and driving policy decisions, not only by you and me, but by investors, of course, I mean, but particularly by monetary authorities, both in their statements and in their actions. Now, crude oil is continuing to weaken on its what I remain convinced is a medium-term correction. Now, as a relevant digression here, there are a whole lot of people who are writing copy about everybody blaming speculators for driving up the price of crude oil. And they're saying that that's absolutely outrageous, and that of course it's supply and demand from producers and users of the actual light sweet Texas crude. Well, come on. The crude oil price more than doubled from the period between September 2007, that's September 2007, and early July 2008. It more than doubled during that period. Now, does anybody really think that the demand for crude oil doubled over that period, or that there was a massive drop in the supply of crude oil over that period to justify the price of oil more than doubling? Well, of course not. So this is just like all the thousands and thousands of examples that chart readers have seen over many, many decades, where a speculative frenzy takes place and drives a market up. We see hundreds of examples of these every year, where we get a feeding frenzy on the upside, and that was the hoarding of crude oil, and then the putting out the big stories and all the big forecasts to create the self-fulfilling prophecy. And we get the market pushing way up away from its 200-day moving average, indicating the overextension, and then it becomes very, very vulnerable to a reversion to at least the mean in terms of that moving average. Now, I haven't got that chart right under my nose, but I think that mean crosses somewhere around the 105, that moving average rather, crosses somewhere around that $105 to $110 level, but I'm looking for a move back to at least $100 for crude. Now, why might that be the case? Because all that talk of peak oil, which is a very interesting theory, and we may well have seen peak oil for conventional crude, where you just drill a hole in the ground and out it comes. But that remains unproven, although I have a lot of sympathy with that argument, as I've said before. Certainly we do have finite supply, although there's plenty of unconventional oil in the sands and in shale and so on. And there are still oil discoveries being made, but we're using more than we're discovering, that's for certain. And the cost of the unconventional oils to, in terms of extraction is very expensive. And that's why I maintain that crude oil is very much in a secular long-term bull market. And everybody was forecasting when crude oil was just under 150, and that had been a big target, of course. What'd it get to? 147 in a bit, I think. But when crude was close to that 150 level, then everybody ratcheted up the forecasts, 175, 200, 250, T. Boone Pickens saying 300, then Medvedev in Russia saying 500. Well, and they were all saying this not a matter of maybe, but that it was coming quickly, and some of those chunky forecasts, although I don't think the 500 one, were supposed to be by the end of the year. And what we have seen, of course, is a peak demand. We've seen a sharp drop in demand, and we will also see, we are seeing, energy conservation measures put into place. Now, it takes a while for all that to come forward, but people dump the SUVs and they buy the more fuel-efficient cars. But this will be a massive drive to lower consumption. And some people are saying that US consumption will fall by 2% per annum for the next many years. Well, that would be a good thing. I think it's ridiculous that the US really consumes so much more oil per capita than the rest of the world. So I find that a very believable forecast. And I think we will see all sorts of energy efficiencies made, and then we get all the substitution. But what I think is taking place here right now that is helping to drive this move down, just as we see with every other overextended trend, that those who drove it up, then the smarter ones at any rate start coming out, and they drive it back down again. So that lemming run into the tracker funds, and we have to remember, of course, that commodities, we often describe them as not only the best game in town, but at times it looked like they were the only game in town during the second half of last year, and certainly into the first quarter of this year, and then some of them began to peak, but not crude until early July. But the people who drove it up are now helping to drive it back down. And that's this background story. And the lower oil goes, the better it will be for most of these stock markets, not least the oil importing stock markets. It may well weigh on oil shares. It would be surprising if it didn't. So again, I think we're very much seeing this medium-term correction. And while that forecast appears to be on track, then the more people believe it, the more likely we are to see further rallies in a number of these stock markets. Now, the stock markets that may underperform for a while, and here are the resources producers. But again, we take the long view and we say, well, we are in a secular bull market for commodities, and if we get the crude oil price coming down, if we get a big shakeout in a lot of other commodities, there because combination of factors, because demand tails off a bit, supply increases in agricultural commodities. Supply is that key variable overall. So supply increases, people come out of the tracker funds to a certain extent, driving prices down, then the inflation figures really do begin to subside, and central bankers become more concerned about promoting growth. We're already getting that in China, or at least we're getting murmurings to that effect, and I think we will see that actually spread. And so that is a very positive development for stock markets, even though growth is slow and we're still getting the profit downgrades. But the people who were calculating at $200 oil by the end of 2008 suddenly recalculate and say, wait a minute, it's going to be closer to $100 a barrel, and that's rather a big difference in terms of your economic calculation. So that's the situation we're in, and I think we will see other recoveries in some of these stock markets. Stock markets continue, but at this stage, there's enough uncertainty out there and enough volatility that let's take it one step at a time. I think we certainly should see at least a continuation of this technical rally lasting at least a month or two. Well, heavens, it only has to go another week and a bit, and through the end of next week, and it will have lasted a month. Hasn't been all that strong, but watch that leadership. Now, most important of all, let's say I'm too optimistic. Or if you're a bear and you're looking for a downward break, or if you are holding longs, or if you agree with me, but you're saying what would indicate that maybe this hypothesis of a further rally now was not going to play out. Watch the lows that we saw last week. The reaction lows that we saw last week. Now, these don't apply to all indices. They don't apply to a number of US indices. They don't apply to the Australian. I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. They don't apply to a number of the Asian indices. They do apply to the US indices. But to repeat that, they do not apply to the Asian indices so much. They do not apply to the Australian index. But they certainly apply to the Wall Street indices, and that's the leash effect. And they certainly apply to most of the European stock market indices. And that's where most people look on with horror at the meltdown in housing prices and the slow growth and say this is where all the problems lie. So psychologically, and these are important markets. Now, what I'm saying is that we had that mid July low right around the 15th, and then we had a sharp short covering rally, then we had a little setback lasting for a few days, and then we had those upper dynamics giving a higher reaction low. The actual low is in mid-July, as I've just said. The higher reaction lows for the European and North American indices and some others elsewhere around the world occurred on the 28th and 29th of July, so near the end of July. Now, as long as those higher lows are not taken out, and if I sound like I'm belaboring this point, it's because it's such an important one in terms of technical signals. As long as those lows on the 28th and 29th of July are not taken out, then the rally's still on track. Now, we can't retest the lows without at least taking out the higher reaction low on the 28th and 29th of July. If that happens, then we can say, uh-oh, this rally's lost a bit of momentum in here. And is that opens the door to a possibility of the retest of the lows. Say, taking out the late July lows is not nothing more than a warning shot. But there are no warning shots at present. That's the point I'm trying to make. Now, what about the indices that have not that have just been ranging in here, such as a number of those Asian indices? Well, they have different patterns with the China mainland China indices, for instance. Thinking now of the Shanghai Composite, it's got to break above that 3,000 level that we've pointed out on a number of occasions. It hasn't done that, hasn't been able to do that yet. So it's just still in this ranging pattern, not all that far from its lows this year. Markets such as Hong Kong and the H share indices. Well, they didn't break down below their March lows. I don't think Singapore broke down below its March lows, but they've been underperforming here a little bit recently. But I think confidence will improve. I think confidence is beginning to improve in those other markets. India's done best, interestingly. Okay. What about the long-dated government bonds? Well, I think they will weaken again, but they won't weaken while confidence is fragile and people are far more concerned about the slow economic activity overall. But I think again, money that's gone into those bonds is those long-dated government bonds. That's just safe haven money. People in U.S. 10-year treasuries are getting a negative return. In other words, the rate of inflation is above the yield that you receive, which is just a tad above 4%, 4.1%, something like that. That's not really very attractive, is it, on a 10-year basis? So I think those are really shorts to be shorted once their technical rallies tend to lose a little bit of momentum. The U.S. dollar, this is the really interesting one. It makes me wonder, was there some sort of agreement between the U.S. and the Saudis that where the Saudis said we will or we won't, well, but it says start the way I finished it, the way I started it, say, yeah, we'll produce more oil, telling George Bush that if you engineer a stronger dollar, if you support the dollar. I don't know. It's pure conjecture on my part. But at any rate, we do have the dollar, as I said, up at the higher side of its range against the on the US dollar index. To my dismay, it's broken up out of its range against the Canadian dollar. That's costing me a bit right now because I'd shorted the US against the Canadian dollar. And I may have to cover that, but I'm holding on just a bit in here just to see if it actually maintains that break. It's gone up 11 out of 12 days here, so I'm hoping that we get at least a bit of a pullback. But more importantly, for you looking around these currencies, the dollar is testing the higher side of its range, or actually breaking above the higher side of its range against a number of currencies. And that the more it extends this rally, the greater the possibility that this actually is part of the overall bottoming out process. I'm still skeptical of that, but as you know, I adjust my theories if they stay. If they find themselves seriously out of whack with the price action. However, looking at the US dollar moves over decades since the breakup of Bretton Woods back in 1971, the dollar's bottoms have usually formed over many, many months. They've sometimes been multi-year. And I would expect that to be the case this time because I think with a weak US economy, we're not going to see US interest rates move up anytime soon, and I do expect more printing of dollars. But it's not happening at the moment, is it? The dollar is still firm. Okay, I think that's pretty much it, and I've run on a little bit in this audio, so I'll wrap it up now and just say all the best to all of you.